from Vermont Public. This is The Frequency. I'm Henry Ebb.
And I'm Anna Van Dyne. It's Tuesday, February 7th. Here are today's headlines.
One of the men at the center of the EB-5 scandal has accused the state of turning a blind eye to the fraud. That's according to a recent court filing from Bill Stenger. In an affidavit filed last week, Stenger claims that Vermont regulators knew his business partner Ariel Quiros was misappropriating money. But Stenger wrote state officials didn't intervene because they wanted the pair to finish development projects at Jay Peak Ski Resort. Stenger is currently serving an 18-month sentence at a federal prison in Massachusetts for his role in the fraud. The claims are included in a civil lawsuit brought by investors who were defrauded by Quiros and Stenger. The suit alleges the state didn't provide adequate oversight of the EB-5 projects. The Attorney General's office said it would respond to the accusations in a future court filing.
A group of lawmakers is concerned about possible cuts to the Meals on Wheels program, and they're seeking state funds to offset the impact of inflation. Right now, the $7 million program is paid for with federal funds, but Wolcott Representative Dan Noyes is urging his colleagues to allocate $2 million in state funds in order to avoid serious cuts.
How are we supporting Meals on Wheels programs across the state? Are we making sure that they have the resources they need to deal with the fact that inflation in groceries are going up?
Meals on Wheels provided more than 1 million meals last year. About 18,000 Vermont seniors received food from the program.
An instance of contaminated cannabis has state officials fired up about improving testing infrastructure. Last week, regulators announced they had pulled contaminated cannabis products off the shelves of 5 stores. Cannabis Control Board Chair James Pepper says his panel became aware of the problem after a consumer reported feeling sick after using a product that had not been approved by the board. The product was tested and showed the presence of a fungicide that's banned for cannabis production. Pepper says he's making an emergency request for $1 million from the legislature so the state can expand its limited testing capabilities.
So that when we're out at a cultivator's facility, we're taking our own samples. That not only protects the ultimate consumer, it puts the cultivator on notice that they shouldn't try and manipulate their sample.
Pepper says all of the contaminated cannabis products will be destroyed.
Coming up, why some Vermonters who were in foster care want access to their state records. More after this.
Thanks for tuning in to The Frequency, and thanks to Vita for their support. Vita, celebrating 50 years of helping Vermont businesses grow and thrive. From agriculture to energy, startups to established companies, find solutions that fit your business. Visit veda.org to start your next chapter.
What if there was a piece of your history hidden away in a box somewhere, but the state of Vermont kept it from you? And what if there was a record of some severe trauma you experienced as a child that might help you understand your past a little more, but you weren't allowed to see it?
These are the conditions that children in foster care face, even when they age out of the system and become adults. And some advocates say it's time to change that. Our colleague Howard Weiss-Tisman has more. And a quick note, this story contains discussions of child abuse and neglect.
So this is the State Record Center. It's for all three branches of state government, and it's operated and managed by the Vermont Secretary of State.
Tawny Marshall is Vermont's state archivist and chief records officer, and she's walking down a long hallway inside the State Records Center in Middlesex. Towering over Marshall are 16 layers of steel shelving that are packed with cardboard boxes holding the state's public records.
You're going to have Office of Child Support. You're going to have Social Security-related records. You can see older ones. This is Defender General boxes. They store records in the Record Center. Rutland Family Court. All three branches, Labor and Industry, which is now just Department of Labor. The Record Center goes back to about 1760 in terms of records.
That's more than 250 years of records that tell the stories of the people of Vermont. And none of them, Marshall says, are as complicated and fraught with emotion as those from the foster care system.
Anyone who was in the system of trying to have someone else providing their care and supervision, which is what they call in the law, is the most probably the most convoluted aspect that I've come across.
Vermont law is very explicit on who can open and read records having to do with children who've entered the foster care system. State officials and law enforcement are allowed to see them. The child's parents or attorneys, and even a person who's alleged to have abused or neglected the child, can request access to investigation files. But there's nothing in the law that says the foster care child, even when they become an adult, can see these records. And people like Brenda Hannon want lawmakers to fix that.
It is their record. They own their life and their record. And that's what we're hoping is to make it easier for someone to get their records.
Hannon lived for almost 10 years at the St. Joseph's Orphanage in Burlington in the early 60s. After interviewing 51 survivors, Vermont's Attorney General about 2 years ago found that there was constant emotional abuse at St. Joseph's and that the state failed to protect the children who live there. Hannon said that while state investigators were able to look at official documents, the former St. Joseph's residents were hampered throughout the process by the limitations on access to the records. And Hannon says other former foster care children shouldn't have to go through that.
Hopefully, it will make them understand the circumstances as to why they were in foster care and emotionally help them come to terms with their younger life and lives and be able to be better adjusted psychologically and emotionally to their past as a child, but also knowing what our past was helps us move forward into the future, I feel.
See, thinking of this, it really affects me. And I get easily emotional over it. Otherwise, I'm an okay guy.
John Magnago spent about 7 years at St. Joseph's. And he says the past few years, where he's connected with other St. Joseph's victims and learned more about what happened at the orphanage, has been healing for him. Magnago supports changes to Vermont's law that would allow former foster care children to learn more about their past.
If the lawyers can get a hold of that information, and the criminals, or whatever you call those, the abusers, I think the adopted person should absolutely have the first right, if any right, to their records. Not these abusers who are getting a lawyer to defend themselves. They know what's going on. We don't know what's going on. You know, our neighbor could have been the one who abused us, but we don't have records. We can't defend ourselves. We're lost.
The Agency of Human Services has endorsed a recommendation to release more records to adults who leave foster care, and lawmakers are expected to debate the proposal this year.
I've gone through a lot of trauma, neglect, abuse, both physically, mentally, emotionally, and sexually.
Justice Callisto is 24 and lives in St. Albans.
In the time that I was in foster care, I actually ended up moving 23 times from foster homes to group homes to respite homes to inpatient facilities because my mental health wasn't the greatest.
Callisto has been trying to access what records are available and says whatever little bits of the past are revealed, however hard they are to face, helps move things forward.
So there's a lot of stuff that I believe is in my record and in my files that I don't know and will probably never know unless I read it myself. And it would be nice to have an understanding of what actually happened because I only remember bits and pieces. I don't remember exact things anymore, which isn't very beneficial for therapy because I am in therapy for everything that has happened to me and for my mental health now because of all of it. But I can't really, you know, move past it when I don't know all of it.
For Callisto, it means everything from understanding more about their medical history to trying to track down details about their past and about the memories and stories that get lost among all of the moves and trauma of being in the foster care system.
I think the biggest reason is we're adults. We should have that choice because it literally is a file about us. You know, and about our life and about what we went through. So I don't, I feel like it's just common sense that we should have access to it.
Callisto says there's no way to retrieve the lost time or go back. You can only go forward with the knowledge you have and the lessons you've learned. For Vermont Public, I'm Howard Weiss-Tisman.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Bob Kinzel and Liam Elder Connors.
Our executive producer is Mark Davis, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Anna Van Dyne.
And I'm Henry Epp. Talk to you tomorrow.
Every episode of Brave Little State begins with a question about Vermont that's been submitted and voted on by listeners like you. What happened to all the restaurant workers? What's the deal with Vermont's fire towers? Why do people like the band Phish? Follow Brave Little State wherever you get podcasts. From Vermont Public, part of the NPR network.